This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When blood flow to the brain is compromised, a stroke or brain attack can occur, causing a medical emergency. Depending on the severity of the attack, patients can experience muscle weakness, difficulty with speech, or partial paralysis. What is the risk of a stroke, and how can someone recognize the signs of an attack? What can be done to prevent the stroke, and what does rehabilitation look like if that happens? What resources are available here in San Antonio? Did you suffer from a stroke? Call in. Tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. Our guest this afternoon, Michelle Patterson, is a stroke program director for Baptist Health System. Cassandra Hunt is the stroke program coordinator for Methodist Hospital and a volunteer for the American Stroke Association. And again, the number to call in, 210-614-8980. Welcome to The Source, both of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. So,
Michelle, let me ask you about strokes. I mean, how frequent do these things happen? Is this a rarity? Is this a, how prevalent should we be thinking about strokes?
Well, we really need to be very aware of stroke. Stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States, and actually every 40 seconds someone in the United States has a stroke. If we look out there amongst our community, probably every one of us either knows someone or has been touched very closely by someone that has a stroke. So stroke is very prevalent, and the most important thing that we're all aware of is what does stroke look like so that we can recognize it and that we can direct people to get stroke treatment very quickly because it is very prevalent. And I think where we're at with stroke care now is recognizing that stroke is even more happening more frequently or just as often as heart attacks are happening these days.
Wow. And so, Cassandra, what do people, so there are some myths out there. People don't understand how severe strokes are.
I think for stroke, with heart attacks hurt. I think with stroke, people tend to ignore the symptoms or are not really sure what is happening to them. And so I think that maybe they're not recognizing it as a stroke and as a medical emergency and knowing that they need to get to the hospital.
Okay, so let's talk about what these early signs are. If that's our mission today, if we can communicate that to more people locally, I think we've done something today. So, Cassandra, tell me more about what are the early warning signs that a person might be suffering from a stroke?
Perfect. So we use the acronym FAST, which we have sometimes, I'll go through FAST and then I'll, we've sometimes
F-A-S-T.
Extended to FAST. That's the acronym, which stands for face. So facial droop or numbness to the face. A is arm. So arm weakness or inability to hold one side of the body, one arm or leg up. S is for speech. So slurred speech or word salad is what we call it, jumbled speech. And T is time. Time is brain, time to call 911. And those are, if any one of those symptoms are present, there's, I believe it's a 72% chance that you're having a stroke. So it's a very high risk if even one of those things are happening. It's a very high risk chance that that is what's happening to you.
So if someone says, I think I'm having a stroke, and you tell them, okay, show me your $1 million smile.
Exactly.
And that's not really working for them. Or you say, raise both of your arms up, and they're really having trouble with one of them. Or you tell them, okay, repeat these words for me. You know, just say a sentence, something really simple, and if they can't repeat it back to you, if it comes out all gerbled, then you know you got a problem. And then you got to pick up the phone and do what?
Call 911. Don't drive yourself. Don't call your mom, brother, sister, aunt, don't call your family, call 911. We work very hard in the region and as a community to work with our EMS agencies. They do an excellent job of notifying us whenever we have a patient who's potentially having a stroke, and they know what to do and they know how to start taking care of these patients on their way to our facilities.
So Michelle, if someone is exhibiting these symptoms and this early warning signs, and you call 911 to get them to the hospital, what can you do for them?
Well, there are a number of things that we can do for patients. So our first thing that we do is first try to determine what type of stroke the individual is having. So there are two different types of strokes. One stroke is caused by a blockage in the blood vessel that is stopping the blood flow to the brain. That's the ischemic stroke. And the other type of stroke is when a blood vessel has actually burst and there is bleeding in the brain. So the first thing that we do for a patient that is having a stroke is a CAT scan so that we can determine the type of stroke that they have. And from there, we determine the type of treatment that we're going to do. So if it is a stroke that's being caused by a blocked blood vessel, then we can give a clot-busting medication if the patient does qualify for that. And then we can also do some additional imaging, and we can look to see if there is a large blood vessel that is being potentially blocked. And then we can consider possibly going in and unblocking that large vessel by doing a clot extraction or a mechanical thrombectomy for patients that can actually qualify for that. So the clot-busting drug we can give up to 4.5 hours, so it is very important for individuals to recognize stroke symptoms and get to the hospital fast because we have 4.5 hours from the time that someone was last known well to give that drug. And for the clot extraction or the mechanical thrombectomy, initially we had up to about 6 hours, but that window has now been extended for a specific set of patients up to 24 hours, and we use some additional advanced imaging to determine if there is still some brain that can be saved in these extended time windows. So there is quite a bit that we can do for these patients. For patients that have bleeding, we can look to see if they've been taking any type of blood thinner, and there are medications that we can give to counteract those blood thinning medications so that we can actually minimize the amount of bleeding that is occurring and therefore minimize the amount of damage that occurs from the stroke.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you if a person should take an aspirin to try to deal if they think they have a stroke, but then if you're dealing with a hemorrhage in the brain, then that would be the exact opposite that you would want to be doing. Is that right?
That is correct. Right. So, and I think one of the things that people have very much, it's become a common thing for people to think about is taking an aspirin in an emergency because people think of heart attacks. But when you're having a stroke, it's a brain attack, and you really don't know what kind of stroke you're having until you get to the hospital. So we do not encourage individuals to take an aspirin when they think they are having a stroke, because if you are bleeding into your brain, then you do not want to take that aspirin.
Well, are there any other little home remedies out there that are we should be careful of? I guess don't elevate your feet, or I don't know. What do you do?
There's really not much you can do. The best thing you can do is recognize it, call 911, and get to the hospital as quick as you can. There are really no home remedies or anything that you can do to make the situation better other than alerting the emergency medical personnel and getting to the hospital as quick as possible.
All right, we're going to take a break now. Our phone lines are open. We invite you to call in with your story about strokes. Are you a caregiver? Did this happen to you? We'll talk about your recovery. We want to talk about recovery when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. A lot to be said about how to encourage brain plasticity to deal with the effects of stroke, how you can use physical therapy to recover, and also making the most of the ability that you have after a stroke. You know, it can be debilitating, but it could also, you can still continue on and have a great life. So we're going to talk about that coming back from the break. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about strokes, a brain attack. It can happen to anyone at any time, but you can do things to moderate your behavior that would lessen your chances of having a stroke, and we'll be talking about that. We want to hear your stories. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And so let me ask you, Cassandra, I've heard people saying they get headaches, and they wonder if that's going to sign that they're having a stroke. I mean, is there a connection?
So the type of stroke that Michelle talked about that is a bleed stroke, the type where you're having a bleed into your brain, that's the type of stroke that we more commonly associate with a headache. It's that very, very severe, worst headache of your life, which is probably one of the most common symptoms of that hemorrhagic stroke or the bleed type of stroke. So it can be that. Headache can also be caused by a lot of things. Headache is one of those symptoms that can be related to a lot of different things. There can be a lot of things going on with the brain.
You could be getting
the
flu.
Yeah,
suddenly.
Exactly.
All right, so but just because you have a bad headache doesn't mean you're going to get a stroke.
Not migraine is sometimes one that individuals will come in with. I think one of the key things is that if you have a severe headache that comes on suddenly with no recognizable cause, and then it's just very important that if you're unsure and you feel like it is very severe, then it's always best to go ahead and seek medical treatment. And if we determine that it is either caused by a migraine or something else, you know, we may find that perhaps it's due to some other medical condition that you may be unaware that you have, then it's still a right decision to come in. Oftentimes, though, it is a thunderclap headache. It is a sudden onset. It is a severe headache, and it is oftentimes found to be due to one of a bleeding stroke.
Should you do this fast rundown real quick?
Mm-hmm. So once again, things that we tell people to look for is the severe headache that comes on suddenly with no recognizable cause. But the most common symptoms that we look for are fast, to remember the warning signs of stroke, and that is supported by the American Stroke Association. So F is for face, asking the person to smile, looking for a droop on one side of the face. A is for arms, asking the person to raise both of their arms and looking to see if one arm drifts downward. S is for speech, asking the person to repeat a simple phrase and looking to see if their speech is either slurred or does it sound strange, does it not make any sense. And then T is for time. If you observe any one of these signs, call 911 immediately.
And we're going to be going over that because I really want to try and get that out there today. But let's get a caller on the air, and this is Terry. The number to call in is 210-614-8980 for you to join a conversation like Terry. And Terry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you mentioned the headache because my sister 3 years ago had a case of vertigo, went to the hospital for 12 hours. They finally said, you did not have a stroke, you have a case of vertigo, because she was walking. She'd get up and walk like, as they say, the drunken sailor. She'd be walking into the hallway and hit the edge of the hallway because she didn't realize she was not seeing properly. So 6 weeks later, she wakes up with a severe headache. And her husband says, come on, let's go to the hospital. She says, no, I'm okay. Well, for a day and a half, she had that severe headache, and it turned out she had had an ischemic stroke. And once her husband realized her eyes, she wasn't seeing clearly, they rushed her to the hospital. It took them 12 hours to determine what kind of a stroke she had. And she had an optic nerve on the right side of her brain, and it was caused by the stroke. She could touch her nose to her, you know, she'd had no droop, and she had none of the fast symptoms. She had an extreme headache that she awakened with. And when she lay down, it got better, but when she got up, it was worse. And because she had had the vertigo, and it took them 12 hours in the emergency room 6 weeks early, she didn't want to go to the hospital. So now she has permanent damage to her left exterior peripheral eye and her right eye next to her nose, and so she can't drive anymore. And it's been, thank God, her personality and everything else, she feels so blessed that she did not have it worse, but she is completely, you know, unable to drive anymore. And there's a book called written by a woman who was doing brain surgery, and she had a hemorrhagic stroke. So we had talked about this book before, which you ought to tell people about. Also, I can't, my stroke of genius, I think it is. My stroke of something is the title of it.
All right, Terry, thank you so much. I'm glad that your sister's doing better, and a great story that you shared with us all. And so, do you know the book?
I believe it's called A Stroke of Insight, or My Stroke of Insight, rather. And it is written by, I believe she's a neurobiologist, and she also does a TED Talk on it as well that you can look up that's based on that same story. But yeah, she's a neurobiologist and very familiar with the the brain and how it works, and she had a hemorrhagic stroke, and she talks about what was going on, even though she knew it was happening to her. It's how it affects you. So that's a really great book to read, absolutely, for somebody who may be dealing with recovery after a stroke.
Let's go to the caller, and this is Warren. Hi, Warren. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, sir. Thank you for having me on. I saw a video about a week or two ago about someone that's having a hemorrhagic stroke, about pricking each finger, I guess, to relieve the pressure either in the capillaries or part of the overall blood pressure. And I just wondered if there was any truth to that, or if that would help, or if it wouldn't altogether.
All right, Warren, thank you for the call, and which you all want to address that.
Okay. The only treatment, the best treatment, is to call 911 and to get yourself to the emergency room, to let EMS get you to the emergency room as quickly as possible. As Michelle mentioned, there are no home remedies. Pricking your fingers is, to my knowledge, not scientifically proven.
Bloodletting.
Bloodletting is not.
If you attach leeches to yourself, that would be another method. No, this has no clinical evidence that has improved anyone's chances of anything. Is that right, Michelle?
Right, that is true. One of our goals is to certainly get the blood pressure down rapidly. I'm not sure that method would actually do that. It's not scientifically proven. Most of our treatments that we do to treat stroke have definitely gone through the scientific community, so that'll take us a while to see if that's actually going to work. So right now, that's certainly not in our playbook. I'm not sure if it would get the pressure down
You'd have to really start bleeding out in order to reduce pressure.
I think you'd have to lose quite a bit of blood, to get the pressure where we need it to be. So we'll keep going to the stroke conferences, and we'll see if someone wants to test that one out.
But for right now, that is a myth that's busted.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that
call,
Warren.
Thanks for bringing that up. I had not heard that one, although my colleagues had heard that one, had mentioned it.
Social media. Don't get your medical advice through social media. And Bree is called in. Hi, Bree. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I actually have two. So the first one is, are there any sex differences on the type of symptoms one might experience? And my second question is, what percentage of people would experience all of those fast symptoms?
All right. Thank you, Bree. So any gender differences in strokes and how we in the treatment? So do you want to give that a whirl, Michelle Patterson?
I'll take that.
This is Cassandra Hunt.
Yeah. So for symptomology, the symptoms are the same for both men and women. That's a really great question, because there are some differences for heart attack between men and women. Those symptoms can present slightly different for men and women. For stroke, it really depends on what area of the brain is being affected. So to answer your second question, it really depends on where the stroke is happening in your brain, whether you're going to have one, two, or all of those fast symptoms. And that's why, with all of the research that's been done, we know that if even one of those are present, that there's a very high likelihood that you're having a stroke. Women are more affected, according to American Heart Association, American Stroke Association. Women do have more strokes per year than men do. But again, the symptoms are the same. It is very dependent on where that stroke is in your brain.
One of the things they caution you about, if you're taking birth control pills, that it could raises your risk factor for strokes. Is that something that enters into this?
Yes, that is correct. There are some certain birth control medications that can have some effect on coagulopathy, which is a big fancy word for blood clotting. And so it can affects how thick or thin your blood is. Definitely something that you want to follow up with your physician. Take that to your physician, have that discussion with them. If that's something that you're concerned about, if you already know you have that risk factor for stroke in your family, or even if you don't and you're concerned about it, and then when you add in women who are 35 years or older, that in addition to the birth control are two things that can add to your risk factor. So definitely have that conversation with your physician if you're concerned about it, and if that's something that you're considering doing.
And smoking.
Smoking, Yes.
Right. And I think that's the key, too, is if you look at any one thing, it's usually not just one thing. It's usually a list or a number of risk factors that increase your risk for stroke. So if you are looking at, is birth control in and of itself a risk factor? If you were comparing yourself to a person who wasn't on it, then you would say, yes, my risk is higher. But if you are on birth control and then you add in, how is your blood pressure? What does your cholesterol look like? What is your age? Then you begin to add multiple risk factors on top of that. And so then your risk then becomes greater. And so the most important thing is to definitely have these discussions with your healthcare professional, look at your other risks, see what other things you can also do to decrease those risks so that you can come up with a plan to decrease your personal risk for stroke and then try to prevent it. We do feel that 80% of strokes are actually preventable, but it does take us to look at ourselves individually, see where our personal risk factors are, and then start to develop a plan and take actions to actually decrease those risks.
Well, we can modify many of those risk factors, but not your genes. I mean, if you have a family history of strokes, does that mean anything?
Yes. If you have a family history of stroke and also heart disease, then your risk is higher for heart attack and your risk is higher for stroke. We cannot control our age, our gender, our race. So those things also can impact your risk. Things that we can control, though, are our weight. We can control our cholesterol. We can control our activity. We can choose whether we're going to smoke or not. If we are diagnosed with diabetes, we can follow our diabetic control plan. If we have atrial fibrillation, we can follow the plan for that. And then if we have high blood pressure, we can take steps to control that with medications, diet, and then also exercise.
But if we can identify that there's history of strokes in my family, then I ought to be paying close attention to the risk factors that I can modify and saying, well, this is already, you know, I already got this. I got to make sure that I reduce my other load that could influence this, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
And so start looking at, I guess, blood pressure, you know, that's the big one? Is that the one that should be looking at first?
Right, yes. High blood pressure is actually the leading risk factor for stroke. And it is also very prevalent here in our community, here in San Antonio. So we have a lot of strokes that come in with very high blood pressures. And so we have a big opportunity in our community. It's all about knowing your numbers. So if you know what your A1C is for where you at from a diabetic standpoint, if you know what your blood pressure is from a hypertensive standpoint, and if you know what your cholesterol is from a cholesterol standpoint, those are the three things that we can really control, knowing that high blood pressure, however, is the leading risk factor for both ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes.
So we know San Antonio has a problem with diabetes and obesity, mm-hmm. and I don't know where we are with smoking. We're probably better than we were.
We're better than we were.
Yeah, but you know, can we do better in these areas? We've reduced increased the age to buy smokes at 21. That's a good thing. So we know that this is probably a high risk city so we have to figure out how are we going to compensate for that. So are we giving everyone the training that they need? Have we got the emergency rooms prepped and all ready to go? If someone says exhibiting, I might be having a stroke. Are we having conversations like this afternoon, reminding everyone about FAST, which is the acronym to trying to deal with an emergency that you think you might be having a stroke, which is the, say it again really quickly as we go to break, Cassandra, FAST stands for?
FAST, face, arm, speech, and time. Time is brain. Call 911.
All right. By the end of the show, everyone's going to know about FAST, and that's going to be a good thing. And this is Dan. We want you to call in. If you got a question or a comment, talk about your history with strokes. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Your story could help save lives. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about strokes. If you start experiencing sudden weakness, loss of physical ability on one side of your face or body, maybe a sudden trouble with walking, talking, understanding speech, these are warning signs that you could be having a stroke and you need to get medical treatment fast. What does that mean that you're having a stroke? What kind of treatments are available here in the short term and then in the long term? term for recovery here in San Antonio. According to the CDC, over 130,000 people die each year from strokes. So how can we reduce your chances of having one and be better prepared in case one does happen? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. With me to talk about that, we have Michelle Patterson. She's the Stroke Program Director for the Baptist Health System. Cassandra Hunt is the Stroke Program Coordinator for the Methodist Hospital and a volunteer for the American Stroke Association. And we got a caller, and this is Leah. And Leah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
So I had a stroke back in November. I was at work when it happened, and we didn't know what it was. And it started with the instant headache that just came out of nowhere. My vision was very different. I had zero depth perception and weakness all in one side. And I actually went on about my day when it happened. I finished my work day. I drove home. I picked up my kids. And when I had a conversation with my husband, he was the one who went into panic mode. I just assumed I had overworked myself and just needed to calm down and come down from the day. And he told me to take myself to the hospital. And when I did, they, after hours of them going through everything, we found out that I had a bilateral vertebral artery dissection.
Everybody's going, really, wow, here when you heard he said that. They're like, oh my, yeah. Holy cow. All right, go ahead, Leah.
Yes.
Go on.
So it took about 18 hours for them to diagnose that it was a vertebral dissection. And it took a week for them to realize that it was not just a vertebral artery dissection. It was bilateral. It was on both sides. But I was only experiencing the stroke symptoms a week before. When the symptoms came back a week later and I ended up back in the hospital, I spent a total of 7 days in the ICU. And that it's not fun. I appreciate that you guys are doing this show, because I wish I would have heard something like this before, because I maybe wouldn't have spent so long in the ICU.
Do you have any permanent loss?
No permanent damage. Luckily, really, it's just it. They couldn't say what exactly happened. Their best guess at this point was that I have low collagen, which I didn't even know could be a thing. They said something as simple as a sneeze could have caused it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Leah, thank you for your story. Thank you for sharing it. I want to get your reaction to that. First thing I want to say is, if you think you're having a stroke, don't drive. That's probably the last place you need to be in this day of Uber and Lyft and other things. Go that way. But let's get your reaction. Let's go Michelle Patterson.
Well, first of all, I'm very happy to hear that you're doing okay. So I think Cassandra and I here were just amazed at your story, first of all. Number one, I think that sometimes your story is more common than not. And that is, sometimes because stroke doesn't hurt, you're not bleeding, it's not black and white, I think sometimes it is harder to recognize. I think the most important thing to take from this story is that your husband was able to recognize the fast symptoms, and as soon as he recognized it, he did take action. And I think that's the most important thing, is sometimes the individual themselves is not able to work through what's going on. Your brain can fill in the blanks to realize what is happening, but it's being having those around us being able to recognize these fast symptoms and getting us to where we need to be. Now, next time I want him to call 911 and put you in an ambulance and get you there. But in the end, I'm very happy to hear that you're okay, and we were able to get you into the hands of the experts, so they were actually able to get to the root of the issue and help determine the cause of what was going on with you.
Well, and Cassandra Hunt, and they're able to, just by doing scanning, they're able to see what's going on in there?
Yes. Yeah, so as Michelle was talking about earlier, there are some advanced imaging techniques that we can use. We'll start always with the CT scan, which is kind of the most basic and can give us, it breaks it off into two. Is it hemorrhagic or is it ischemic? That'll give us that determination of if it's a hemorrhage or not. And then that gets our path lets us know which path we're going to take as far as treatment goes. And it sounds like she required some additional imaging. And again, I echo Michelle's sentiments. I'm very glad that you're doing well. And it can be very difficult to diagnose, which is why we say come to us and let us. We will run all of the tests if we have to find out what's going on so that we can give you the appropriate treatment.
So Leah was fortunate. Not everyone's going to have a great story like
not
that.
Not everyone is that fortunate, especially not with the type of stroke and the location of the stroke that she had. We've heard, I think that's why our reaction was the big wow, mm-hmm. that she was able to make it through the day and that she's actually able to do okay and that you're doing great. I mean, these are the success stories. These are wonderful stories. Sometimes the stories are not this wonderful. Just to echo Cassandra, there is some amazing brain mapping, angiography, things like that, that's when we have to dig in a little bit deeper to really get to the root of what caused these symptoms.
All right, here's another caller, Sylvia. And Sylvia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. The reason I called, I had a very unusual stroke and didn't realize I had had a stroke. I was in front of the gym and I fell down spontaneously and I broke my kneecap. I drove home because it was my left leg, and my husband took me to an emergency clinic where I was evaluated for the knee. Didn't really evaluate the rest of me because I was cognitive and talking just like I am to you. Several months later, I went to visit, and so the knee was being repaired, and I was on crutches and a boot and all that kind of stuff for several months. And I went to my primary physician 6 months later because I had gone to an orthopedist who was taking care of the knee. And he said to me, why did you fall? And I said, I have no reason to, I don't know why I fell. He said, go have a CT scan of your brain, which I had done. And I had had a stroke. I had had a clot and I had had a stroke. And that helped explain why I had weakness on my left leg and my left side, which was kind of ignored. And I tell you this story because this was so atypical, and unfortunately I still have the sequelae of the stroke in that I don't walk well. I have done physical therapy several times. I'm doing it again now to help my walking. So that's what I'm sharing with you today.
Sylvia, thank you for your story. Thank you for sharing it with us. Another powerful story. And do you want to talk about what you see as the points we need to highlight, Michelle?
Right. Once again, you know, we learn from every opportunity. We have been working on stroke programs since 2008 here in San Antonio. And that's one of the big things that we have worked on over the last 10 years. And that is when someone has fallen, our initial impulse was to focus on the trauma. And so now we begin to focus on, much like your physician did, why did you fall? There's usually a reason for someone to have taken that fall, to dig a little bit deeper, to ask ourselves that very question. And so that was something that we had to learn very early on when we started stroke centers, is digging a little bit deeper into that.
You know, and again, she tells me she drove home.
I know.
We
got some amazing people here. You're hurt, and you drove home.
Maybe we should just encourage people, if you need help, ask for help.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We're not all going to be super person. Mm-hmm. So Cassandra, how do you tell people, you know, how? I mean, what are people afraid of to call for help?
So I've heard several stories. We go and do community events and talked with a lot of people. What I hear a lot of is they're concerned that it's not really an emergency and they might be embarrassed to call 911 because they don't want to alarm everyone and they're afraid it's not really something serious. Also hear cost. They're concerned about the cost of the EMS transport and all of that. And then other times they say, well, I can get to the hospital faster than it'll take the EMS to get here. So to answer all of those things, the cost of a transport is going to be way less than the cost of your potential disability that you might have from a stroke. And the EMS, like I said, we work with them very well. They're going to start doing some assessments in the EMS, in the bus. They're going to start doing some assessments on that ambulance and let us know ahead of time that you're coming so that we will literally wait for you at the door. Whenever EMS pulls up, our teams will be ready to go to treat you or to start assessing and making those treatment decisions. The other thing, and that also goes along with the I can get there faster than they can get to my house, that goes along with that. They are the experts.
It's basically the emergency room coming to you.
Pretty much.
Right.
It really is.
And starting the treatment right away.
It really is.
You're not going to have to go, you're going to drive. I mean, just driving to the medical center and finding a place to park is enough to give someone a stroke, you know, and just, but if you can just already have someone get there and start the treatment and get you going, and all those seconds count.
Absolutely.
Right.
And don't
they will
be embarrassed.
Automatically assess you for FAST also. They will call into the hospital. They will take you directly to the CAT scanner in many of our facilities. But one thing that we do notice in our region as a whole, despite all of the advances, we treat way more people for stroke. We do so much better. We offer so much more to our stroke patients. But one thing that does not happen in our region is more people do not call 911. So it's a big opportunity for us.
Okay, we're going to keep talking about this. We got another break coming up. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear your stories. Your stories can save lives. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about strokes here in San Antonio, talking about research and treatment and early signs. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about strokes. You know, and our guest, Michelle Patterson, Cassandra Hunt, they're both experts in strokes here in San Antonio. When people have strokes and sometimes they have partial facial paralysis, you know, there's often some social isolation that goes along with that. And that's a terrible thing. We know that being social and interacting with people and doing new things is a way to encourage neuroplasticity and get over strokes. And we should never isolate anyone for anything that's, you know, like that. And so how do we make sure that people feel like not let it hold them back? People sometimes isolate themselves. And then we should be totally awesome, cool with anyone who's dealing with these types of things as well. I mean, don't we need to verbalize this, Cassandra?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's just sort of a general social statement, you know, just to not discriminate against anybody for any reason, any of physical features that you see, interact with them. But yes, as a whole, as somebody who has suffered a stroke and who may be dealing with that paralysis, there are resources in our city, in our community, in the surrounding areas. There are support groups. There are people who have gone through the same thing that you've gone through and are going through it, and you might actually be the help for somebody else who's just had this happen to them. So also it's going to do you, the more your brain can practice, the more your brain can start to heal itself or relearn things. And so it's very important to get back to as normal of a life or as normal of a routine as possible, so that as much as you're able to, so that you can rebuild and your brain can relearn how to do things.
All right. And let's get another caller and on the conversation. And Bill. Hi, Bill. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. Yeah, I'm a stroke survivor and guinea pig who survived and has thrived. Back in 1977, I was working on a research ship near the North Pole and got a on-a-job head injury, which resulted in a ruptured giant buried aneurysm. I was evacuated by helicopter to St. John's, Newfoundland, in Canada, and where I received treatment for the aneurysm, which is a type of stroke. I was on life support for 2 months and received all kinds of drugs to reduce the brain injury. And the amazing thing about this is that the treatment that I received 40 years ago in Canada is exactly the same treatment that's being done now in the United States for people who have strokes and head injuries.
All right, Bill, thank you so much. And I'm glad you're doing better. And that sounds like that was a tough situation near the North Pole, having a condition like that, and finding treatment. I want to read some emails that we have here. This is from Valerie. In 1999, my grandfather called me to tell me that my grandmother needed help because her right arm was weak. He had no idea that she was having a stroke. None of us did. Had we known and not waited to take her to the hospital, she could have been spared so much damage she unfortunately never recovered from. I am thankful for your doing this show to help people understand the signs and how important timing is. It can save your life. Got another email from Desiree. My mom had a stroke about 7 years ago, which paralyzed her left side. She is part of the Alamo Area Stroke Support Group, which meets at the Health South Rio SA every Thursday at 10 a.m. On Cinnamon Hill. And you're raising, so you know about that.
That's an amazing group. I think we've both been out and visited with that group.
Yes, thank you so much for mentioning that support group. That's absolutely, Riosa is one of the rehab facilities that does that. So yeah, absolutely. Any support group that you have, thank you for mentioning that one.
And so let's go over this thing again. We've already been over it, but I'm going to talk about FAST one more time because I really want people to take that away with them from listening to this program. Everyone's going to get that. So FAST, F-A-S-T, and this is what, Cassandra?
It is face, facial droop, or facial numbness, arm weakness or numbness on one side of the body, speech, slurred speech or inability to speak, and T is time. Time is brain.
Okay, let me get another caller, and this is Michael. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having the program. It's a really great program, really great to get this this idea out there to the public. I'm a paramedic. I work pre-hospital acute care and treatment, and something I don't know if you guys mentioned on the show or not is we also use the VAN stroke scale or the VAN stroke assessment. It's for visual assessment and aphasia and neglect. It helps us determine on if the person is having a stroke, if it's like a large vessel occlusion, which also determines which stroke center we can take them to. And we do have three major stroke centers in San Antonio, which are all located in the medical center. But most of our hospitals in the area do take stroke patients. But one thing I also wanted to mention, too, that I didn't hear you guys talk about because I was kind of listening to the program in and out, running some errands. But that time really is important when we get on scene. Our initial assessment, we do that Cincinnati stroke scale, the FAST scale that you guys use. We also use blood glucose check. And what's also really important to mention is if they're outside a certain time window, if it is a stroke needing thrombolytics, they're outside that time window. So as soon as you see the symptoms, you got to call.
All right, Michael, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. What is the blood glucose level? What does that have to do with that?
So we have some regional criteria, and one of the things that we look for is our paramedics will check a blood glucose, and so we look for a stroke mimic. So if the blood glucose is either very low or very high, then that could possibly be a stroke mimic, and then that would actually require us to do some blood glucose treatment, try to get that blood sugar back into a normal level. Then when they're in the hospital, then we would reassess them then for stroke-like symptoms.
Got an email from Sally. I have been told that emergency ambulance pickup via 911 will only take you to a hospital that serves your area. Can you request specialized stroke hospitals? And so, Cassandra.
I believe that you can request certain hospitals, but again, our EMS agencies, and thank you for calling in. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, Michael sounded like they were, they're going to do the rundown. They're going to evaluate you at a very sophisticated level. And if they determine that you are dealing with a stroke, they're going to get you to the people who are best suited to give you the treatment that you need.
Absolutely. Again, we've been working on this for the last 10 years. You know, we've built this system of stroke care in San Antonio and the surrounding areas. And that's why, you know, we work so closely with EMS to get you to the right place. They know.
So that side is ready to go. We need to arm people with the knowledge to recognize the early signs of strokes and make them aware that they need to take action immediately. Do not hesitate. Pick up the phone, call 911, get someone to you immediately to start evaluation and treatment. And I want to thank both of our guests, Michelle Patterson, Stroke Program Director for the Baptist Health System, Cassandra Hunt, Stroke Program Coordinator for the Methodist Hospital, Volunteer for the American Stroke Association. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.